folks, welcome to this week's edition of Drive the Bid. I am Diego Rosenberg. My sister got the normal name in the family, and you are Derek Shakey, I believe, correct?
Yes, speaking of normal names.
Yes, okay.
Just like Smith.
Smith, or Jones, Johnson. So anyway, shall we begin?
Yes, sir.
Okay. News.
Yes. So my news story has to do with automotive colors. And there's a data analytics firm called IC Cars, and they examined sales of over 10 million 1 to 5 year old used cars sold in 2018 and 2013. And they discovered that the majority of those cars had colors that fall in the grayscale range.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, exactly. So like neutrals, black, silver, white, gray.
And how boring.
Yeah, well, it depends. I mean, there's good shades of each, but yeah, let's say conservative overall. So in 2023, so far at least, grayscale colors were on 78.9% of the cars sold. That's up from 77.2% in 2018. One of the biggest gainers is gray. Surprisingly, silver, a very similar color, is down almost 4%. So there was a big shift there. And then a surprising result of this study was finding out that unusual colors did a good job of holding their value. I mean, I've always been under the impression that, you know, sort of eclectic, you know, sort of far out colors weren't good for resale value. But it seems like, you know, the pandemic and production shortages have had something to do with them holding their value. In the top five, so you're going to like this even less, Diego. The number one color for 2023 has been white. So that's that had a 26.2% share. It was number two in 2018. And the rest of the colors in the top five, they basically just shifted positions. So number two, which used to be number one, was black. Number three is gray, holding steady from 2018. Same with silver at number four. And then the number five color is blue, and it was number six in 2018.
I don't think I mind any color other than the subjective. I just don't like the lack of variety.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my thing.
Well, it seems like in recent years, you know, like browns and different shades of gray have popped up. You know, like there's different, like, I know Toyota and Audi, they've had somewhat different shades of gray available. And then Hyundai, the Sonata, they offer a color called a Portofino gray. But I don't know. I mean, I think there's been some glimmers of hope, but obviously the overall trend is, yeah, playing it safe.
You know, when you go to a BMW dealership and everything you see is black or dark blue, I see no glimmers.
Okay, I get that.
Like I think sometimes people are forced to make a choice because they would rather go to the lot and pick out a car than order something because that's where the bargains are.
Well, and they don't have to wait, too.
What? Yeah.
And it works for the dealers because I used to work for one, and the wisdom there was basically you don't sell somebody what they want in terms of color. You sell them what you have. So that's why, you know, if you've gone to a dealership and they ask, oh, what kind of color are you looking for, a light or a dark? Right there, they're already keeping the options open.
And for me, the colors, it's not about light or dark. It's like, what do you have? How does it look on the car?
Yeah, that's important.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm an enthusiast, so it's a little bit different.
Well, and, you know, speaking of playing it safe, you know, the study broke down, you know, colors by states and metro areas. And they said in terms of percentage of grayscale colors, oddly enough, Hawaii is the drabbest in terms of, you know, color sold. And their reasoning was at least due in part to the fact that a lot of rental cars are in Hawaii. So they reasoned that the rental fleets were playing it safe in terms of the color selection. On the opposite side of things, in Alaska, they're the most colorful state. And I think it's, you know, the exact opposite. You know, there's a lot of, you know, it's cold. There are a lot of, you know, barren, you know, sort of drab places, I would imagine, up there. So, you know, especially if you live there and you're used to the cold and the isolation and this and that, you know, having a brighter color probably, you know, jazzes up your day.
I think a brighter color would jazz up my day in any state.
True, true. And, you know, as far as, you're not going to like this either, Diego. You know, I'm looking for a new car. I don't have the 2019 Bullet, but the Bullet that I have, the previous generation, you know, it's Highland green, you know, standout color. Greens, the average price of green cars has shot up. But, you know, I'm looking for a new car to replace it. And this got me thinking, like, I think in terms of states and colors, I think the environment and the climate has something to do with it. Because, you know, right now my car's got a black leather interior and we're in Phoenix, where it gets, you know, 115, 120 in the summer. Black leather interior, not fun. And, you know, the idea of a black car just be even hotter, but also it's harder to hide scratches and dirt on a black car. So now I'm looking for a new car, and what I'm leaning toward is white or light silver with as light an interior as possible. You know, just makes a, you know, keeping it, you know, clean looking, or at least appearing as if it doesn't have as many scratches as it does, easier.
I will have to say, having owned a white car, I found it pretty difficult. Statistically, I don't know, but I would guess that white is probably second hardest to keep clean or deal with blemishes after black. I don't know. That's just like my perception from my experience, and it may be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing, because white, obviously, you get any sort of, you know, road tar or dirt on it, it's a high contrast surface. But there's something about black getting dirty where it's, I don't know, to me, it's even more visible, oddly enough.
Yeah, I mean, black's definitely the toughest.
But sure. Yeah, I like the cooler colors out there, don't get me wrong, you know, but, you know, the heat here has just got me really leaning toward something as light as possible.
You know, the other day, I guess this was last Friday, I saw BMW X3 in this very nice burgundy. I mean, it stood out. Even my wife commented. And I looked online just to see what was the stock locally in Phoenix in the two dealerships. And black interior was not an unusual combination with this color. I agree with you. Black doesn't make sense in this heat, but a lot of the cars here are black. I bet if you looked at other cars online in the dealership stock, you would find that.
I think there's a sort of stereotype or a perception of a tan interior in a car being something for like old people or somebody who's boring. You know, I get that feeling that a lot of people think that.
I think tan is just fine. I mean, it depends on the combination, like what's on the outside, but tan goes with most colors.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if it's like champagne on the outside and tan on the inside, okay,
yeah, that's... Yeah, I would want something a little bit more contrast, maybe.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you know, there are different shades of tan, or there's saddle, you know, and that can look really nice, especially, yeah, if it's set against a, you know, a complementary color on the outside.
Very good. So, on to the next topic after I recharge my computer. Sorry, folks, we had some technical difficulties, but we are going to continue. Thank you for your news story on colors, Derek. And my news story is this Ford Shelby F-150 Lariat 4x4 Centennial Edition truck. I think I got that right.
Yeah.
So I guess 2023 is the 100th anniversary of Carroll Shelby's birth in Texas, of course, just like you. And Shelby American has released a few Centennial Edition vehicles, and this is the last of them. And the F-150 Lariat 4x4 Super Crew, actually, I think I forgot to say before. That has a 400 horsepower 5-liter V8, which is the Coyote, maybe? You are a little bit more versed on the Ford animals.
Yeah. 5-liter, the modern 5-liter is the Coyote, but 400 sounds low.
Let me tell you this. With the Shelby American car, the Centennial version, 400 horsepower is standard. You can get an 800 horsepower supercharged version of it. Otherwise, you know, they add wheels, suspension, splitters, hood, interior.
Badging, of course.
Yeah, a lot of it. It's limited to 100 examples. I want to say the price was for the 400 horsepower one was maybe 126 and maybe 135 for the supercharged one, which is kind of odd because if I'm spending that kind of coin on a pickup truck, I would just shell out 10 grand more, you know, whatever it is, a little less for the supercharged one and just have that bragging rights and that's it. You know, it's like, why bother getting the cheaper one? But whatever the case may be, it's available for order. That price, I believe, includes the donor car. And that may be a technical term that I'm not very familiar with, donor car, because it's like you can own it and then just submit it. It doesn't necessarily have to be new.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
They just upfit it with the package.
Exactly. And it's still, it's just as legit, you know, still invoiced as such. There's a technical issue that I did not understand with the supercharged engine. I don't know. They didn't really say emissions, blah, 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 but something like, I don't know. I didn't get it. I mean,
it's not 50 state compliant.
They didn't even mention anything about states. I don't know if it's just, I don't know. I wrote a story about it on the classiccars.com journal, but I didn't include this wording in the article, but it could be accessed through the Shelby American website, and any interested parties can read more about it and see whether it's compliant in their state. I can't tell you. It was just like some kind of weird asterisk. Maybe it's worth looking up now. I don't know. We have a lot to talk about, so you friendly viewers can look it up yourself and see if this truck interests you and it's legal in your state. So that's the news, almost. We have Steve Mignante news.
Okay.
There is none. He's stable. So that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Little by little.
Beats the alternative.
Absolutely. So now we are going to talk about our topic for today, if not this week. I don't know how you want to articulate it. I'll articulate it by saying these are cars that are popular in the hobby, old or new. Let's say late model or not. But for some reason, you have trouble grasping why it's interesting. Of course, this is somewhat of a subjective take on things, but I'd like to think that we are both, we attempt to be objective, but let's inject some subjectivity in this topic.
Well, Diego, here's something you might not know about me. My opinions are correct.
Yes. Okay. I may disagree, but sure.
So the first one on my list, now you look at that, it's a Viper, obviously. And
I could look at it on my computer. Is that okay?
No, you must look at that. Okay. And so a lot of you out there are probably wondering, why did you pick the Viper? And look, I get it. The Viper, cool car, V10, lots of power. This is a particular case. So overall, I get why people like Vipers, buy them, race them, all that kind of stuff. I totally understand that. But when I was thinking about this topic, I remembered, golly, when was this? This was back in 2014. I went to a race at the Circuit of the Americas, and that was back when Dodge was still racing the Viper, and they won that day, by the way. And a couple of people that attended the race we're a married couple from East Texas. And one of the, at the time, FCA reps connected me with them. And I got to talking with them. Very nice couple. And they were, I would say, you know, subjectively or objectively, they are the biggest Dodge Viper fans because they brought their his and hers Vipers there. They each had one, different ones, but they both drove Vipers to the event. And then as I was talking to them, they revealed that back at home, they had 74 more Vipers from all of the generations. And I thought about it. I was like, okay, like I get, you know, maybe you want like a, and they had all different types. You know, they had like a ACRX, like it wasn't even street legal. They had the Striker color cars. And then they had this, I think it's Sons of Italy Foundation. It's a one of one car. So I get having a little variety, but I didn't understand having 76 of them. It just, I mean, I get kind of obsessive with things I like, but that was just on a whole other level. So I didn't get that. I mean, they had other cars. I mean, they had at least like a C7 Corvette. So that wasn't all that was in their collection. And I'm sure they had even more, you know, other cars, things like that. But I just didn't understand almost exclusively having Vipers. But hey, to each their own. And that's the thing with this topic is just because I don't get it. I mean, you know, as long as somebody's enjoying the hobby, you know, and just everybody do their thing. You like it, you like it. You like Priuses, knock yourself out, you know?
So do you like Vipers?
Yeah, they're cool. Okay. Definitely.
So this was, let's say, a micro take rather than a macro take.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because overall, I get it, but I just didn't understand having that many of them.
I think in some ways, having that many cars, period, is a little bit questionable. And I'm not saying because of rich versus poor or anything like that. It's just it kind of boggles the mind. It just seems to be unmanageable. You got to hire someone to take care of them.
Well, that's the thing.
Which is fine.
Because, yeah, on one hand, if you have enough money and space to have, you know, let's say 100 cars, right? You probably got the money to pay, you know, people to keep up with them and all that. But I've thought about that too. You know, okay, like, let's say I win Powerball, right? Could get a giant warehouse, fill it with cars and everything, and have somebody or a team of people tending to them, right? But then it's like, just enjoying them, like cycling through them and actually driving them enough to warrant the purchase, that would seem like a part-time job. Like the enjoyment would seem like a burden after a while.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember that lawyer out of Texas? I think he was like a tobacco lawyer and he won the case against the tobacco companies or whatever it was. And he just started buying cars and cars and cars and cars. And he had like 1,000 cars and then he died in an accident.
No.
This was like less than 15 years ago.
No.
Yeah. He had tons of cars.
Yeah.
And then he passed away suddenly. And it's just like, how does the state deal with all this stuff? All these cars. They're all back in auction.
Oh, okay. So he didn't have a will for them or any
I don't know. I mean, as a lawyer, I imagine he had some kind of will prepared already. But it's still, it's like when you have that many cars, it's, I mean, it was literally probably close to, I mean, I would say if it's not 1,000, like 700. I mean, something nuts.
Yeah, that's
and
crazy.
And you go to auctions and, you know, him, it wouldn't just be just him. It would be like the people he hires for this stuff to manage everything. It's like maybe they'd get this Duesenberg, but then they'd get these other neat cars that didn't cost a lot of money. Let's say like maybe, an Amphic car or something, you know, I mean, which is pricey still. But, you know, it's just like you'd get a little bit of everything and it's just, it was just too much.
That, you know, I can see where you're coming from, albeit on a much smaller scale. A long time ago, I used to collect a lot of 1/18 scale model cars. And I did it for years. It's probably been close to 20 years since I've been out of the hobby. And when I was in it, I didn't realize this, but after I stepped away from it because the prices just shot up like crazy, in like the mid 2000s, I realized, and this I think applies to collecting anything, but for me it was model cars. And I would imagine for people that have giant car collections, after a while, it's not even, I realized when I would get a new car, right? Like a new model car, there would be the lead up to getting it, you know, the looking at it, learning about it, looking at photos and reviews, lusting after it, placing the order, waiting for that, the anticipation, right? And then I would get it, and maybe 2 weeks later at the most, once it was on the shelf and integrated with the collection, it would become invisible to me. And I would be back to chasing the high of getting a new one. So after a while, it wasn't even about the cars themselves. It was about collecting, about the new, about acquiring more, you know? So even just feels
for sure,
like
for sure.
That can kind of burn you out.
I was kind of that way with video games when I was a kid. And then my parents kind of limited me, and I still hate them for that.
There wasn't a lesson that came from that, like, no. Oh, maybe they were onto something.
No, it's my money, you know? I mean, you know, it's like the games are $25, $30.
The good old days.
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't know. It's kind of the same way today.
Well, they're so expensive now.
Well, I mean,
I guess it's all relative.
$25 to $40 seems to be the norm for a lot of games still.
I thought there were more, but yeah.
I mean, look, I don't have PlayStation. I got a Switch, so what do I know? So anyway, thank you. That was interesting. So here's mine. 1940s Fords. I don't think I had trouble finding a redeeming quality about them. They're not interesting to me. I understand in the hot rodding world, they were plentiful and they had a flathead and you could put in hot rodding, you could put any engine and that's cool. But even like customized, I just found them not very interesting. Let's say the 1942, the first year this design came out, you know, there's some interesting aspects about them. But 46 to 48, they changed the grill, which is less interesting. Greased Lightning, you know, the car from Greece, I guess that's cool. That's based on this vehicle, but I just never found anything interesting. Like, especially after 1940, with the 1940 Ford is gorgeous in comparison. But, you know, and in some ways, the trend of the fat fenders and all that with the 40s has a lot to do with it. I just find the Fords less attractive. You know, not until 1949 did Ford become interesting. Now, in comparison, the Chevrolet from the 40s, I actually think it's the same thing. I don't find these cars interesting at all. The styling is not interesting. You know, compared, let's say, with the 1942, unique styling, you know, the first of the generation. I think there's something to it. The 1941 Chevrolet is very nice. It looks like a 1940 Buick in many ways. Even like the 1949 Chevrolet, when they finally, you know, the first post-war Chevrolet, all these are not very interesting to me. I don't understand why they're so popular. I think it's just an issue of nostalgia for a lot of people. And that's fine. People are allowed to like what they want.
Yeah.
To like.
Yeah, you just don't get it.
You know, 1955 to me is when Chevrolet started. It's like going from 1942 to 1955. That's how long it takes for me to be interested in a Chevrolet.
Oh, okay.
You know, there are other cars, I think, that suffer from this, but let's say in the 40s, I think a lot of other brands are more interesting. For Ford, 1949 is more in, you know, that's when Ford started becoming interesting again. But let's say the Air Flight Nashes and the Hudsons, maybe not the Packard so much. You know, there's interesting cars from the 40s. I just don't find the Fords and the Chevrolets to be very interesting.
Well, you know, it makes me think that maybe one of the reasons they're so popular is just accessibility.
Yeah, absolutely. But here's the thing. I think besides accessibility, Fords and Chevrolets work somewhat attractive. I mean, it's like, I think we're in a era, and this has been this way for a while, where the cheaper brands are not as attractive as the more luxurious, or let's say the pricier brands. But back then, that wasn't exactly the case. I think there's strong Ford and Chevrolet models. But these, I don't think, are very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, I intentionally left out, let's say, some of the fastback body styles, or the business coupes are a little bit more interesting to me. But I just was never moved. And, you know, that's on me.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
Now, I will say that green one, you know, it's got similar styling. It has styling that's similar to the first car you showed, the black one. But, you know, the color definitely jazzes it up. But that first one, when you initially put it up, my first impression was that it looks like an old British car.
Yeah, I mean, that could be true. And I'll tell you what, old British cars are not very stylish. I mean, sure, you know, you get some of the sharp-edged Jaguars and more prestigious British vehicles. And, you know, they have their fans, and they influence, let's say, Bill Mitchell with the 1963 Buick Riviera. But British cars, I think, look dumpy overall. You know, the average British sedan, mm-hmm. even in the 50s and into the 60s, sometimes I'm like, huh. But, you know, I'm not here to bash British cars or anything like that. I just...
Just American cars, yes, right,
exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
Certain ones.
So.
Well, that's the thing with those. I mean, you know, they're... I mean, I liked that green one primarily for the color. But
yeah, but it's also like it's got accessories from hell. It's got a little bit of everything. It's got some Chevy Rally. I mean, it looks like Chevy Rally wheels a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking with the
maybe
derby caps right
maybe
there.
Maybe just the hubcap.
Yeah.
Touch.
But, you know, the thing with these is like, you know, and that kind of general shape is, to me, it's not unattractive, but there a certain sense of indifference sets in, which I think is worse than actively hating a design. Because it's just like, oh, it's there, and it just fades into the background.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And the problem with this, in some ways, is that we're told how great Harley Earl was as a designer, or at least his department. And that's fine, but you compare this with a 1949 Oldsmobile, or Buick, or Cadillac. I mean, sure, they're more prestigious makes, and maybe there was a little bit more design effort put into it in a certain way. Maybe the wheelbase makes things look a little better with the longer wheelbases of the other brands. But let's say that Harley Earl Halo has not carried over into the Chevrolet. I know some people would disagree with me, but that's just how I feel.
Well, and I mean, let's be realistic. You can't win all the time.
No. No, you know? But this is an era when GM was winning a lot.
Yeah.
And even Ford.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it seems to be that way with sports teams where, like, you know, there's a very successful franchise and then they have a rebuild year and then there's no patience for that. It's just like, we need to win instantly again all the time.
Yeah.
You know? That's the problem with success, I guess, is it sets that precedent and makes people very impatient.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm not into sports, but I do understand. I mean,
I'm not either. But I've watched them enough and, you know, gleaned enough to where that seems to be the mindset for certain fans.
Fair enough. So here's another thing for you to hate. This one's on you.
Again, yeah, you know, that's one of the core parts of this is, you know, you do you, you like what you like. I'm not, you know, there seems to be a lot of, you know, flame wars and animosity online. Like, you know, of course, there's the classic, you know, Chevy versus Ford, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, people just...
Which is dumb.
Yeah, I just, to me, like, I understand liking what you like, but then, you know, just blasting other people for liking something different. I don't understand it. Let's just all enjoy it. And this is one of those things. A lot of people like these. Go for it. I just don't get it. Like, I, you know, these radically customized big pickup trucks, I don't get it. I understand, like, you know, I guess that's what it is. Like, I was, you know, growing up, my dad had a lot of cars, but he never modified them. So that was not something I was used to. And then, you know, before I started here, I spent years testing media vehicles, you know, press loaners. And of course, you know, they're not your cars. You can't modify them. Like they come as they are, and that's it. So I think that had something to do with it. But, you know, with pickup trucks, I understand like a lift, different tires, but this is just on a whole other level. I don't understand in terms of driving. Now, at SEMA, at shows, I get it, especially if you work for a company, you want to showcase what you're selling, what you can offer to consumers. So you kit these out. I totally get that.
But it also begs the question, how do these things develop for them to be showcased? Maybe I'm not wording it the best way, but it's just like, you know, there's definitely a lineage of how things develop to arrive at this. And, you know, I'm not part of that subculture, so I don't know. It just looks a little ridiculous to me. And ridiculous is fine. There are things I like that are ridiculous. I mean, let's use an analogy. It's like you can have Beethoven and you can have the Ramones. And the Ramones is not anywhere near the complexity or many other things as Beethoven. But that doesn't mean that something lowbrow is not worthy.
Yeah. I mean, you like what you like. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, the, you know, our discussion of these things themselves, they're not curing cancer. I mean, it's all just hobby. It's all subjective, yeah. You know?
Well, and a little bit of ego, unfortunately. You know, it's like my car doesn't speak for me, but I guess some people feel that their car or truck speaks for them. And, you know, that's their issue. I don't want to play that game, but I don't know. If this is your peacock, I'm going to laugh.
Yeah, I mean, and here, ever since I moved to Arizona, I feel like Arizona is kind of like, it's very similar to Texas. The weather's similar, but also, you know, there's a lot of pickup trucks here. And, you know, you see just mostly stock ones on the road, but every now and then, yeah, you see these sky-high lifted, jacked-up ones. And that's, I think, my main issue with is it's not just the cosmetics for, you know, personally driven modified trucks. It's the livability. It makes me wonder, like, first of all, gas is, you know, ungodly expensive right now, and these trucks are already thirsty, right? But then you jack them up, you put these huge wheels and tires. I guess if you're in that space, you know, money is not really an issue and fuel economy is not really an issue, but there's that part of it. And personally, I hate being shackled to a gas pump. But then it just makes me wonder, okay, well, getting in, ingress, egress, I guess you can get the power deployable, you know, running boards or steps, but ingress, egress makes me wonder about that. And then just seeing, you know, like if you're at a crosswalk, pedestrians, other vehicles, curbs, things like that. I just imagine these cannot be easy to live with just in terms of maneuverability and everyday driving.
I don't think that's a concern for the people that own these, though. But I had a point that I was going to say, and now that I have a moment of edgewise, I forgot what it was. But no, point taken. In the end, it's a big tent, and everyone's invited in the car hobby.
Yeah.
That's, you know. And I know you share the same opinion, so.
Yeah, let's just, you know, enjoy what you enjoy, you know. Exactly. Let's all get along.
So, but yeah, it's just like, these are head scratchers, as is this. You know, I'm not anti-Japanese car or anything like that, but.
Yeah, you have one.
Yeah, for sure, for sale. And, you know, these are just used cars that are now being customized. Now, is this like, let's say when I was a kid, this is like the same thing as a kid buying a four-door Cutlass and adding Kragers and jacking up the back and maybe adding shackles and other stuff? Maybe. I don't know. But I think sometimes these cars look somewhat ridiculous. Sometimes also the drivers are ridiculous. I know I was telling you the story of this clapped out racer looking Supra.
The new Supra?
Yeah. Kind of like this, but not as ridiculous. The guy is driving like a D-bag in the shopping center and cutting through the parking spots and all that. And it was just like,
he wanted to make sure you saw him.
I know. And I don't care. I don't care, especially when it's not a cool car. Maybe it's cool to someone. It's cool to him, obviously. Put some money into it. I don't, and it makes no difference to me whether he did the work or not, or she. I just don't understand these. And I'm going to drag this into the picture a little bit as well. This is kind of the same thing. It's a little bit different, but I just don't get it. It's fine. Fast and Furious is to blame a little bit. But I don't know. It's like, I'm not into stereos either. You know, these things have big stereos in them. It's all a subculture. That's cool. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't need to get everything. I understand it to a point. I just don't understand why someone, you know, these people need to feel torque to understand that there's more out there, but they are shackled with this. And online culture also, I think, kind of engenders this kind of stuff. It's like, let's put the money into something more interesting. At least get a Civic Si or something like that.
Well, and there's what were you going to say?
This is a Mitsubishi. I can't figure it out. Or is this this old Sentra maybe?
Well, you know, looking at their Honda wheels, but the rest of it, I assume, I'm thinking it's.
Maybe it's a 92 Accord type of thing, and just it's unrecognizable.
I'm thinking it's an Accord,
sedan version of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get a complete bead on it, but I'm thinking from what seems to be stock, I think it's like a '90s Honda. I mean, it's certainly got Honda wheels. Here's the thing with these, you know, let's say the more Fast and the Furious inspired builds. There's tears to them because I understand the appeal at least 20 years ago because, like, oh, it's a cool movie. It's a subculture. And it was that generation's version of, like, hot rods, right? It just happened to be with Japanese cars. So I get it back then. And to an extent, I get it now. It's not my thing, but I get it because it's like, well, I don't have a ton of money. I have an economical car. It's good on gas, but I want to jazz it up and, you know, make it sportier and more distinctive, right? But here's the problem. There are tiers to it. So if you're going to do it, let's say a Civic or whatever, and it's in great shape, the work is done well, it hasn't been in accidents, that is a lot better looking, even though I don't understand it. That is a lot better looking than one where it's like halfway through the transition, the car's already beat up, and then the stuff that's been added on, it's not complete. There's primer. There's like scrapes where you see like the fiberglass showing through. Like
that looks like a work in progress, though.
Well, yeah, there's works in progress, but then there's some where, you know, they have the kit and everything, but the car is just rough and beat up and old, you know? And it's like, okay, yeah, it's got a fart can exhaust on the back. It's got a wing. It's got the skirts and everything, but it just looks so clapped out. You know,
it doesn't help. It's a suburban clapped out Japanese car.
Yeah.
But, you know, something like, let's say, a Corolla SR5 with the pop-up headlights from the 80s, mm-hmm. something like that stock would have some appeal to me.
I agree.
Be a cool car.
Yeah.
But taking things beyond, I don't know. And even with this, the Eleanor, I was never interested. Is there a connection between this and this? I have no idea. This is just the evolution of expensive hot rodery in the end. Did I just make up a word?
I think so. Okay. Oh, you know, speaking of which, I wanted your truck story. I wanted to say this. I believe I coined a word back in the day that is very applicable to modified trucks, especially, you know, where I'm from, mm-hmm. Texas. Yeehawsome.
With that, I'm going to move on.
It hasn't caught on.
Yeah. Okay. So now we are going to talk about your favorite Auto Hunter cars for this week.
All right. So this is a Mitsubishi. Just kidding. This is a 60s vet. This is, I believe,
this looks like a 64.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just had to refresh my memory. Yeah, 64 vet. So it's got the L75, 327, of course, 300 horsepower, 4-speed, good combo. And then I think this is Riverside Red. Yeah, Riverside Red. Numbers matching engine. And then it's got power brakes. And this particular one comes with a matching removable hardtop and a cart for the hardtop. And according to the selling dealer, this has 84,000 miles on it, which is, you know, not a big deal when it's a car this old, but it's kind of cool to know that. You know, they report the mileage to be accurate. So just a, you know, classic car, classic design, classic color. Decent horsepower and some, numbers matching engine that always helps.
For me, I love C2s, but I'd want a higher horsepower version or one I could modify. And this one I wouldn't modify.
Yeah. I just keep it as is.
It looks good.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, it doesn't need anything.
No, but that means it's just not for me. But it's for someone. I mean, this has everything you'd want, except maybe more horsepower. I think 250 horsepower was standard in 64, so this was probably the first step up. And then I believe 365 horses. No, there was a 340 horse, maybe, and a 365 and a 370 fuel injection. I don't know. I'm starting to lose it with the Corvettes, at least for 64.
Well, we were looking at one the other day. I think the Fuelie in 64 was 375 horse, and then the high output 327 was 365.
Yeah, so yeah, same state of tune, just different type of fuel delivery.
Yeah. But yeah, this is, this isn't obviously the most potent version, but I mean, yeah, 300 horsepower and looks like that. It's a good combo.
And a 4-speed, of course.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want the power glide.
No.
And the 3-speed, I mean, it's a stick, but... So yeah, very good. So here's a car that I'm going to talk about. 1969 Firebird in Espresso Brown, which I think is one of the better browns out there and looks stunning with the white top and interior, maybe parchment. So forgive me if I get the color name wrong. We don't know whether this is a Firebird 400 or has had a 400 transplant. The owner says they have PHS. We just don't know yet, unless you have heard from our rep about that inquiry. I just think this is a very nice looking pony car.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And with a 400, you know, it's going to scoot. The owner says it has a 400 from a 68 GTO. I don't know what a horsepower it was, probably 350 most likely, which was the standard engine for the GTO and also for the Firebird 400, although the Firebird 400, it was rated at 330 horsepower, but same engine. So I think this is a very good looking car.
Yeah, and this is one of those cases in which, you know, when I was younger, I always thought, oh, brown car, it's boring, blah, blah, blah. But there are shades where it's not only distinctive, but attractive. And this is definitely one of them.
I still think that way of brown, but this car with the white trim is, you know, a little bit different. That if it didn't have a vinyl top or had black trim, like a black vinyl top, I wouldn't like it. If they had a gold vinyl top, I'm not really sure about that for 1969 Firebirds. I think that would be a nice contrast as well.
Yeah,
also, you could get leather interior in these cars. I think tan was the only color they had in leather. Don't quote me on that. And that would be very nice as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good color combo because, yeah, that contrasting top, not only does it stand out by itself, but it draws more attention to the body.
Yeah, absolutely. So next, we have another Auto Hunter car. This is your turn.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so sticking with the red GM theme. So this is a 63 Impala Sport Coupe. And I'm typically not an old Impala guy. If any Impala, you know, I typically lean toward the 90s Impala SSs. But this is a looker. I mean, you know, it stands out because of the red. Nice lines. You know, it's a little slab-sided, which gives it presence, but it's got enough contours to make it you know, to keep it interesting. And then I'm always a sucker for rally wheels.
Even if they're not correct for the car?
No, I mean, it's, I mean, they, yeah. But in this application, they work. I mean, there's something simplistic and at the same time, like, muscular about those wheels. They just look fantastic on this. Under the hood, this has got a 350. It's a crate engine, and it's paired with, in this case, a Power Glide. And then, you know, behind those rally wheels, power brakes.
So here's my thing with rally wheels. I don't like rally wheels except for the 67s. The 67s have a different center cap. It's a shallow center cap. The 68 and beyond have this like big cone of a center cap. I don't like it. 67s, I much prefer. You'll have to look at the brochure online for a 67 to see. I just personally think it looks a lot better.
Oh, okay. See, I've always liked those caps. I think those are the derby style. I remember looking that up sometime.
What does derby mean in this case?
I guess like a hat, you know, like... That's what I've always taken it to mean.
Looks like one of those fezes, maybe, without the string.
Yeah. Either way, yeah. Good looking wheels. Good looking car.
So here's my choice for another Auto Hunter car that is online for auction for you to buy, folks. That's a 1971 Olds 442. Now I'm a little bit biased because I used to have a 70. I think they're good-looking cars.
Definitely.
I'm not an Oldsmobile guy. I just ended up with one, and I'm glad I had the experience. It's a pretty cool car in many ways. 1971, GM lowered the compression, so this is down in horsepower. And for that reason, these cars were the red-headed stepchildren of the muscle car world. But they do have their charms, and the horsepower is not as down as a lot of people thought. Like, these are still good performers, and they run much better in today's gas than a high compression engine. So this one, as you can see, they added the when I say added, let me take that back. This car has the W25 Ram Air hood, fiberglass hood. I don't know if this car came with it or not, but it has, you can see all the Ram Air equipment. It's a bench seat, which was optional for the 442, and if you wanted an automatic, you got the column shift because you could not get a console with a bench seat. So in some ways, to me, this is a very adult 442. Has the rear spoiler. For me, I would rather not have the vinyl top, especially with a rear spoiler. I think it makes it look a little bit more stubby, but that's just me. But very cool color, Nordic blue, which you don't often see. You see more often Viking blue, which is the regular medium blue. Even though this kind of looks medium, it's really a light blue. Very nice looking car, super stock three wheels. As we discussed earlier, super stock two and super stock three wheels look the same, except the color, body color, it makes it a three. So I think this is a nice car. Presents well.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to find a happy buyer.
Yeah, and it definitely sticks out. I mean, a distinctive color, but then, yeah, you have the white top, makes it even more noticeable.
And I think the white top looks better than a black top, but that's just me.
I agree. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, with the spoiler, it's kind of a mix of things because the white top makes me think less sporty, but the spoiler makes me think sporty. So it's this kind of a mashup.
I will tell you that statistically, vinyl tops are very popular. Probably at least half the cars had them back then. And I say probably, I'm just talking out of my butt. I really don't know, but vinyl tops are very popular. So it's like, it's not unusual to see. I understand that you think it's not, let's say, it does not lend itself to a performance look. But in the end, you have a lot of performance cars that had it. So I myself prefer vinyl tops on, let's say, a three-box car with a square roofline, something that's a fastback or semi-fastback like this, I don't think it's as good looking.
Well, that being said, Dustin, you might want to disinfect Diego's microphone after this.
So that being said, that is the end of our podcast. Thank you very much, Derek, for all your thoughts and ruminations. And thank you, folks, for watching. Be sure to press the like on your YouTube so you can catch up with other previous podcasts of Drive the Bid, as well as future ones. So thank you very much.